What is up, people? I'm Garrett Johnson, and you're listening to Consider Before Consuming, a podcast by Fight the New Drug. Today, we invite you to consider your constant daily string of careful considerations. Seriously, think about it. Think about everything that you take into account every day to keep yourself, your loved ones, and your community happy, healthy, and hopeful. Now, consider this. There is an ever-growing body of research demonstrating significant negative impact for yourself and the ones you love in the consumption of pornography. It can change the way you think, harm your ability to connect with other people, and contributes to changing the world in negative ways. This isn't about moral arguments. It's about considering the science, facts, and personal accounts. So whether you're joining us for education and prevention or healing and hope, our goal is to bring you value by publishing conversations with people from around the globe. In these conversations, we'll discuss how pornography can negatively impact individuals, relationships, and society as a whole. But we're not just inviting you to consider the potential negative consequences of pornography, but also the benefits to a life free of pornography and its influence. You see, our team at Consider Before Consuming is dedicated to shining a light on love and all types of healthy relationships, including healthy sexual relationships. We accept and respect that individuals have the right to develop their own stance on the topic of pornography. We're simply inviting you to look both ways, check your blind spots, and consider before consuming. In today's episode, we sit down with Clay Olson. Clay is co-founder and president of Fight the New Drug. He's also the CEO and founder of Impact Collective, which owns Fortify. The Fortify program has helped over 200,000 individuals from 155 countries address their challenges with pornography. In addition to all this, he's a husband, father, and a sandwich enthusiast. Clay took time out of his busy schedule to sit down with us and reminisce on the creation and evolution of Fight the New Drug. We also discuss why it's important that this topic continues to be considered and discussed in today's society. We hope you enjoy this episode of Consider Before Consuming. We want to welcome to the podcast Clay Olson. Clay Olson is co-founder and president of Fight the New Drug. So it's a big deal to have Clay on. He's a busy man. We had to talk to his assistant. How many assistants do you have, Clay?
44.
Okay, we had to talk to one of your assistants and make this happen. We joke, but you are a busy man. You're scheduled out, and so we appreciate you being here, Clay.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
We are in our podcasting room. This is episode number one.
Numero uno.
Numero uno. That means number one in Spanish, just so you know. And we are here in the room with Clay Olson. Clay, we want to get started by asking the most important question of them all, and that is, how many Jimmy John sandwiches have you had this year?
Let's just cut right to it, right? I mean, this is what everyone wants to know.
Exactly. This is the important stuff to me.
I don't know. Here's the thing. Jimmy John's, I mean, if they hear this, you know, they're great. They're wonderful. But it's really about convenience. I mean, the idea of, like, you know, getting up out of my desk and then going to my car and then driving somewhere and then sitting down or picking something up, it's just like, who's got time for that crap? So, like, I just want to keep working, you know, keep drilling, keep grinding, and have some premium sandwich, and I'll eat it. Like, if Jimmy John's is offering, I'm going
to
take it.
There we go. And this show is brought to you by Jimmy John's.
Yeah.
Just joking.
Yeah. This is a sponsorship here.
And then I wanted to mention, Clay, that you've been, like, a great influence on so many people, and myself included. But one area that I feel like is maybe a negative that you've influenced me on is my emails. So if you look at my phone, Clay, I have 335 unread emails. And we were talking the other day, and you mentioned that this is something that you just don't care about. A lot of people are like OCD about clearing out their inbox.
Well, yeah, I probably cared a long time ago, but once it crossed the 1,000 marker, it's like an avalanche. It's just like, okay, I'm not even going to try to clear this out. And I think I'm up to like 30,000.
Really?
But, you know, so many of them are spam.
Oh, yeah.
I'm assuming all of them. In my mind, it just is easier to cope with if I just say
they're
all spam.
People are like,
spam.
I'm not going to email Clay now. He's not going to answer.
Maybe.
No. I know you answer.
I check every day, but yeah, there's a good back.
It's actually pretty gratifying to not answer them all because they're spam. Like I used to be the person that was OCD and like clear them out, delete all, send to trash. It's kind of like gratifying to not care anymore. So that's I just want to thank you, Clay. Actually,
well, see,
the positive influence.
There's good things about it.
Well, Clay, for a lot of people, they're excited to listen to this podcast to learn more about what Bite the New Drug does. As you know, the name of the podcast is Consider Before Consuming.
Yes.
And why did we choose that name? What for you, why is that name important?
Well, I think it encapsulates, you know, one of our primary missions at Fight the New Drug is to help people literally consider before consuming. I think for a long time, this topic has been so misunderstood. And we started Fight the New Drug to help, you know, allow people or provide individuals the ability to make an informed decision on this topic. And I think that for many of us, if we were aware of the potential risks involved with how pornography can impact individuals' relationships in society, you know, we'd pause and we'd consider that decision in a different way than we had before. And for many people, it would actually make them make a different decision. And so I'm excited about this podcast. I'm excited about all the topics we're going to be able to explore and the people that we're going to be able to interview and talk with and learn from. And I think it's going to be so beneficial and powerful, and it's going to provide a lot of hope, and it's going to provide a lot of healing information. And just kind of, again, coming back to one of our primary statements that we always used to talk about, is like, we're here to change the conversation or help guide a conversation on this topic that is so misunderstood. So a podcast, people have been asking us to do a podcast for years. And we're finally getting to a place where we feel like we can handle that load and do it right. And Garrett, you're a big part of that. And we're excited to be able to finally bring this type of a format, this education, into this medium. And I think it's gonna help a lot of people.
You mentioned that people have been requesting for years that Fight the New Drug start a podcast. Speaking about years, I wanted to mention that this year we reached a decade of
10 years.
10 years as a registered nonprofit.
Yeah,
I can't.
It blows my mind.
I only heard about Fight the New Drug back in 2016.
Okay,
so you guys have been around for. That kind of blows my mind that I hadn't heard about it because.
Yeah,
I feel like I should have. Yeah. I would have, but it didn't come up.
We hadn't gotten to you yet.
Yeah. Well, we have 4 million, over 4 million followers on our social media platforms now.
Yeah.
There's still seven. What's the population right now of the world?
Of the world? Yeah. I mean, close to 7 billion.
7.5 billion.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of work to do.
A lot of work to do, yeah.
In regards to getting the information out. But are you proud of that, Clay? Are you proud of, because those are some big milestones, crossing 10 years as a nonprofit and then also 4 million followers on social media?
Yeah, I mean, of course. I think that when we started, we had really large ambitions and you know, we had big dreams as to what we could achieve. But I will definitely say on the record that I think we've exceeded our wildest dreams as college students. I think that this is turned into something that, you know, we can all stand back and be very proud of. And it's due to the fighters, the followers. It's due to our incredible team and, you know, so many unbelievable donors that have come along that have allowed us to achieve what we've done. And so I'm just so honored and proud of all the effort that's that people have put into this. And
yeah, it's definitely.
But there's
taken
so
a lot of
much
effort.
More to do. That's the thing. It's like you said it. Like we are just getting started with where we're heading and the trajectory that we're on. So, although I am proud of where we've come up to this point, I am very excited about the next 10 years.
Right, we are too. One thing that might be confusing for some people is the podcast is Consider Before Consuming. It's brought to you by Fight the New Drug. But for some of our listeners, they're not going to know what Fight the New Drug is.
I suppose that's true.
So can you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah. So Fight the New Drug is a non-religious, non-legislative, non-profit dedicated to, you know, providing a way for individuals to make an educated decision on the topic of pornography using science, facts, and personal accounts. We don't do research. We're a research aggregate, meaning that we take the research that is coming out of institutions like Yale, institutions like the Max Planck Institute of Human Development in Germany, and institutions all around the world that are doing this research. We take that information and then we package it in a way that connects with young people.
So now that we know kind of what Fight the New Drug is, can you talk to how it started?
We started this organization with a few buddies, Cam Lee, Ryan Werner, Bo Lewis, and we were just college students, and we saw that this was an enormous challenge for our generation and definitely for generations to come, and just thought, why not talk about it? Why not do something about it? Why not, you know, try to change or start a conversation?
So you guys are in college.
Yeah.
You and your buddies, all the co-founders.
Yeah.
And
it's like the typical kind of, you know, startup scene and college dorm room kind of thing.
That's awesome. And you guys are just sitting around talking about the harmful effects of pornography.
Well, I mean, not quite, but I mean, it started. So we had started this organization called EDGE, which stood for Entrepreneurs Dedicated to Great Endeavors, which is, you know, don't make fun of us. But we started this organization, which essentially was like a club of, you know, what we felt were really ambitious individuals wanting to, you know, do big things, that wanted to achieve big things, and mostly in the realm of business and entrepreneurship. And in one of those meetings, and at the time I owned my own creative agency, and I had been building that up, and we were doing pretty well. And this individual that was also part of the group, he made a statement that sounds cliche, but I could say that it changed my life forever. he said,
what was the statement?
Well, he said in this meeting, we were going around in a circle talking about all the things that we wanted to do. And people were bringing up like, well, I want to start this kind of company, or I would love to do this. And he said, it'd be cool to do an anti-porn billboard.
So it started as a billboard.
Well, that's what it came out of his mouth.
That's the first statement. Oh,
wow. Yeah, that was the first statement. And first of all, it was super left field, right? Like, it was like, wait, what? What? Like, did you just say anti-porn billboard? Like, okay. But simultaneously, for me at least, and I believe I believe the other co-founders could say the same for them. In that moment, there was like electricity that hit. Like, I mean, it kind of like this light bulb. It's like, oh my gosh, this is a huge challenge, and nobody's talking about it to at least the younger demographic, youth. And, you know, at the time I had my creative agency, so I'm thinking like, we could do this. And it was personal for me, because not only had I think like most everybody, you know, had my own struggle with pornography, but it was close to home, because my cousin, years prior to this gathering, had, you know, he had struggled with an addiction to pornography. And I use that term very consciously, because yeah. I know that we overuse that term, addiction, and it doesn't always apply, particularly with youth. It rarely are they dealing with an addiction. Oftentimes it's more of a habitual stage or a compulsive stage, and it can develop into an addiction. Point is that for my cousin, I would safely say that he was dealing with an addiction at the time which leads people to need more and more often in a more extreme version. And that was definitely true for him. And eventually he acted out in ways that were very, very wrong and illegal. And he went to prison. So this was a very personal thing. When that moment, that meeting, you know, somebody said we should do this campaign or this billboard, I thought back to my cousin. I thought back to my own experience. I thought back to just kind of like the trajectory that we were on in our society and where we were heading as a culture. And I thought, we need to intervene. We need to do something. We need to create a movement to help change the conversation. And it needs to be youth-led and it needs to be youth-focused and, you know, all these things. And anyway, that started us down a path. We started like meeting with, reading books and meeting with experts and being mentored by individuals just to try to like wrap our heads around this issue and what information and research was available at the time, what we understood about it, and how we could take that information and present it to a younger generation in a way that, that not only would they like listen and pay attention, but they could rally behind and get behind and own. And that was a challenge. That was kind of like people heard about that and they're like, yeah, that's impossible, or like, that, you know, don't even bother. And to us, we had just enough naivety to say, let's do this. So that was...
So what was the first thing when you say, let's do this, from the billboard comment?
Yeah, it's interesting. We actually didn't do a billboard for years. So the billboard didn't come into play until probably four or five years in to fight the new drug. But at the beginning, like my background's in film and marketing. So I wanted to produce a film. I was looking at organizations that were really, you know, making a dent at the time, Invisible Children, Liberty North Korea, To Write Love in Our Arms, and even, you know, previous campaigns like the Truth Campaign. And so we took a lot of the DNA of these movements or these efforts and these campaigns, and we kind of learned from them and adjusted and modified to fit our mission and our needs and our objectives. And we started. And actually, it got to the point where I had to leave my company. And at the time, I had a fairly successful creative agency, and I actually left it and went full-time with a nonprofit fighting porn, which, wasn't the easiest thing to explain to my in-laws or my parents or even friends. So
that, I think that, are they on board now?
Oh,
it's
yes.
Been 10 years.
Yes. Oh, yes. But I mean, think about it. Like, first of all, you're trying to describe like what you want to do in a way that you don't have something to point to, really. Like, they don't get it.
You're still in the midst of creating it.
Yeah, and you don't even fully get it. You're still trying to figure out, like, what it is you're trying. Like, I was, you know, we were just kind of piecing things together as we went. And to try to articulate, you know, this wasn't like a standard job. This wasn't like, you don't dream of becoming, you know, or creating an anti-porn campaign, a nonprofit campaign. You know, there's no booth at the job fair for that. So like, it was just really hard to describe to people. And, but we just went anyway, we just plowed forward regardless. And,
you left the creative agency.
I did. I left it. And that wasn't easy.
When was that? What year?
That was 2010. That was 2010. So we got our nonprofit status in 2009. 2010, we got enough funding and I left the company. My company sold out and I went full-time with Fight.
And how was that to get that funding?
Oh my gosh.
Was it?
It was exhilarating, right? I mean, it was scary.
Was it challenging to get it?
Oh, it was extremely challenging to get the money for sure, because convincing somebody to throw down some money on a vision that was really, you know, baking, and, you know, we were unproven. It wasn't like we had done several nonprofits prior to this. So it was really difficult to get the funds for sure. And it took a lot of patience, and we almost gave up multiple times.
Well, my question is, how did those first donors catch the vision?
They caught the vision somehow. I still go back to those days and those meetings. I'm just like, wow, you really took a risk on us. And I am forever grateful for their vision in what we could accomplish. Honestly, like, Fight wouldn't be here today if it weren't for their early donations, as well as the donations of so many others since then.
One thing I wanted to ask you is, Was the goal to fight, was it anti-pornography, or was it more pro-love?
Yeah, I actually don't love the term anti-pornography. I guess that's one way to describe our campaign, only in due to the fact that that's how most people kind of like box it. But if I were to describe it, I wouldn't use that term as much as I would. Like, we're much more of a campaign for real love and connection, and for helping those that are struggling and needing help, and for those that don't have a voice and that are being victimized. Like, this campaign is much more for those things than it is against anything. But again, a lot of people, you know, compartmentalize you. And so that's often the bucket we get put into.
Right. So anti-pornography, pro-love, pro-connection. Yeah, I think one of the goals of the podcast, Consider Before Consuming, is help people consider the harmful effects of pornography, but also to consider like a life free from pornography.
Yeah.
And its influences.
Isn't it beautiful to consider that? When we step back and kind of see and hear from those individuals that have been able to rid their lives of pornography, the description, how they describe their life after that, is just kind of a beautiful thing, and we want to help people recognize that and see that and achieve that.
So that's kind of the driving force. What made you guys select Fight the New Drug as the name of the nonprofit?
Yeah, I mean, we really wanted a name that obviously didn't involve the word pornography or anything that would suggest it, or anything that would, you know, draw up the wrong Google search.
Right.
We also wanted something that was kind of almost like a call to action, like a fist in the air, kind of like rally behind and come together on something. We also wanted to kind of reflect the where things were today. Because when we talk about the new drug, when we refer to the new, we're really referring to the fact that things have evolved dramatically since the era of Playboy, right? Things have evolved so significantly to where what we're dealing with today is unlike anything any generation has ever seen throughout all of history. And you know, it's funny when parents say like, well, what's the big deal? It was around when I was a kid. I'm just like, look, no, it wasn't. Not even close to what youth are experiencing today. It's like comparing a little baby kitten to a saber-toothed tiger with lasers. It's just two different worlds, right? So new is in reference to the fact that things have changed. It's also in reference to the fact that there's a lot of new research on this topic. And drug, we used drug just to kind of more symbolically represent the fact that we now know through studies and research coming out of Cambridge University, from Yale, from the Max Planck Institute of Human Development in Germany, and so many other institutions around the world, that pornography is impacting us neurologically in similar ways that other types of behavioral addictions are affecting us. And in fact, one researcher put it really well when they said, when it comes to the brain, addiction is addiction is addiction. And it doesn't matter kind of whether it's a hard drug or behavioral addiction, the brain functions very similarly. Now, the body will manifest those types of challenges very differently, no question. But when it comes to the brain, addiction is addiction. And so the name kind of was in reference to kind of a rally cry, a call to action, and in referencing this new challenge that we're facing that is like a drug in the way it's impacting us. So that's how we came up with our name.
Fast forwarding to today, Fight the New Drug has produced a lot of content.
Yeah.
And provided a lot of resources. What was the kind of the first resource that Fight started working on?
The first, you know, project that we worked on, and again, remember, kind of rewind to the context of what was happening. It was just me at the time. It was just me and a computer. And the first thing that I worked on pretty early on after we kind of got funding and I was like really moving forward was like I needed something to kind of like define who we were. And I sat down one afternoon and I just kind of like penciled out this fighter pledge and listed out these kind of nine areas of what it means to be a fighter and kind of, you know, creating the and articulating the nuances of what we mean by fighting. We don't mean that in a violent or aggressive or even a physical way. We mean that, in the context of fighting for real love. And I'm a fighter. I fight for what
is... Speaking for those who don't have a voice.
Yeah, and for those that are that need support and love and encouragement. So we created this fighter pledge, and we've had tens and tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of people at this point that have signed those pledges. In fact, for sure, hundreds of thousands at this point that have signed the fighter pledge, and it's cool because it kind of unifies us all. We're kind of all kind of subscribing to what it means to be a fighter.
So you mentioned that you sat down.
Yeah.
The first thing you were creating was... The kind of what is a fighter?
Yeah.
And what were some of those attributes?
Well, should I just read the fighter pledge?
That'd be great.
Okay. Let me just read the fighter pledge because I think that would do better than me trying to describe it. So this is what the fighter pledge is. If anyone's listening and, thinks like, hey, I'm on board with
that. By the way, I have to say that I went back in 2016. I didn't hear about Fight the New Drug until 2016.
Okay.
And I came across Fight the New Drug because of a live presentation.
Cool.
And I remember maybe a month and a half later is when I finally signed the pledge.
Yeah. So what was that like?
Yeah.
So was this how thoughtful were you about signing it? Was it something that you were like, I'm putting a flag in the sand kind of thing?
For me, it didn't symbolize perfection. I wasn't saying I'm... because of my personal challenge with pornography, which we can talk about a different day, but it wasn't saying like, okay, I'm
done.
Yeah, I'm perfect. I'm never going to
struggle. And nothing in the pledge would suggest that. Nothing in the pledge says, hey, you have to be, perfect.
Yeah, so for me, it was like, I was excited to sign it.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, okay, this is kind of a big deal. Like, it means something to sign it.
That's awesome.
And I remember signing it, and I can actually remember like where I was when I signed it. It was a big deal.
That's cool. I love that. I mean, that's really, that kind of embodies what we hoped when we wrote this.
And when you say we, you mean you.
Well.
I mean, it's probably evolved a little bit though.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it has, in fact. And so, I don't want to take full credit. I mean, this has been a process, but I do want to read it. I think it would be good.
Yeah.
So this is the fighter pledge, everybody. As a fighter, I am strong. I have joined an army of determined individuals fighting for love and dedicated to helping others understand how pornography is affecting their lives. I am open-minded. I will respect the points of view of others just as I expect the same for my own. I am accepting. I will respectfully promote my opinions and in the end allow others to choose for themselves. I am a true lover. I will immerse myself in the pursuit of real relationships and avoid their hollow counterfeits. I am bold. I will speak openly and raise awareness about the effects of pornography and the value of happy, healthy relationships. I am a rebel. I am willing to challenge the status quo. I will do what needs to be done and say what needs to be said, regardless of what is popular. I am real. I am confident enough in myself to be genuine and will avoid false imitations or masked presentations. I am understanding. I am aware of the difficulty some may face in ridding their lives of pornography. Rather than harsh judgment, I will show patience and compassion in ways that help relieve shame. And finally, I am encouraging. I am committed to helping others find and keep love in their lives and help those in need. That's it.
Dude, that was powerful. Even though I have read that and I signed that pledge, it's a good reminder.
Yeah. I think it's a good reminder for me even right now. It's just like, that's what it means to be a fighter. That's what it means to kind of join this movement. And if we could all embody that, again, nothing talks about perfection. Nothing talks about it is a commitment to kind of the type of individual that we need to be to make an impact and create change in this area.
As you describe some of those words, some of those attributes like open-minded, understanding.
Yeah.
Those things they're powerful. They require self-discipline and they require patience. They require...
love.
Yeah.
And compassion for yourself and others. And I think that sometimes we're harder on ourselves than anybody else. And just as we need to kind of rise up and change a conversation in our culture, we need to rise up and not beat ourselves up so much.
Rise up and change a conversation in our head.
In our head. That
in our heart.
That you are, you know, you're not broken. You're not messed up. You're not weak. That you're, you know, you have worth, and that we're here to help, to encourage.
And that's on both sides of the story of, like, when I say both sides, I mean the person who has a challenge with pornography, and then the person, in some cases, like a significant other or a spouse. Or
that's on the other side of that, yeah. Interesting. Absolutely.
Interesting. One of the things we do with our, speaking about the pledge, is at our live presentations, we put out the banner.
Mm-hmm.
And we invite the kids to...
It's one of my favorite parts. In fact, it is my favorite part of the entire live presentation experiences, is at the end, during the presentation, we invite seven to come up and sign the pledge, right? But at the end, we open that up to the student body, and watching them, like, race down to put their name down to kind of, like, sign this banner, which is the Fighter Pledge. And, it's a beautiful experience.
Speaking about presentations, we talked briefly about naivety being a good thing. Can you talk to how that naivety helped you actually get your first presentation?
So naivety was kind of allowed us to kind of say, we could make a dent here. We could do something here that's going to make a difference for a lot of people. And so that started a lot of conversations. That started a lot of dialogues. We started meeting with experts and researchers, and we started kind of learning and being mentored by, and we started to kind of just immerse ourselves into this subject in preparation to kind of say, okay, now we kind of, know what messages we want to send, but, you know, now it's like, how do we send it and how we do it? And that's, that was kind of a journey in and of itself, is like kind of finding the how. And I remember the first phone call that I got. So at this time, I was the only person that fights. So it's just me. And I'm sitting here at my computer. I get this phone call, and it's this guy at school, about an hour away from where we were. He was a counselor for that school. And he said, hey, is this Fight the New Drug? And this was the first phone call I'd ever gotten for Fight the New Drug. So it was kind of a beautiful moment. I was just kind of like, step back, like, this is awesome. I just got a phone call for Fight the New Drug. So like, yeah, this is Fight the New Drug. How can I help you? And he's like, do you guys do school assemblies? And at the time, we had never really considered doing school assemblies. I mean, that was kind of like interesting. Like, but you know, as a young entrepreneur, you want to kind of say like, you know, you want to fake it till you make it. So on the phone, he's like, do you do school assemblies? And I said, absolutely we do. And he's just like, can you come this time? Whatever. And I'm like, well, let me check my calendar. Wide open. Yes, absolutely. We'll be there. Which was, you know, several months out. So I hung up the phone, and I immediately, like, it was kind of like go time. It was like, oh my goodness, what on earth how am I going to do this? What, you know, what are we going to say? And how are they going to receive it? And so it was go time. I immediately kind of started working with, you know, our mentors and professionals and anybody that knew a lot more than we did. And we started to kind of piece together this presentation that was coming to him from kind of a younger, kind of an older brother feel. And so the messaging was right. The approach was right. The delivery was right. I mean, I'm sure it was super bumpy. I'm actually really grateful that there was no cameras in that first presentation. It was a bumpy first presentation, I'm sure. But it got us the next one and the next one, the next one. We've done well over 1,000 well over 1,000 at this point, all over the world. And
do you know how many countries we presented in? I think we've reached, the last time I asked, I think we've reached over 800,000 people with our presentations.
Oh, I think at this point we're over 1 million. At last time I looked at that. So
over 1 million people have heard our live presentations.
Yes.
And
which is kind of crazy to think about.
Awesome.
And then as far as countries go, off the top of my head, I'm going to say, like, we've probably presented live in...
You've presented in Guatemala, right?
Guatemala, Spain. We've presented
In Mexico.
Mexico, Canada. We've presented in South Africa. We presented in Trinidad. We presented in...
I didn't know that we had presented in South Africa and Trinidad. That's cool.
Yeah. We've been all over, and we're heading to Chile this year. And so, it's been cool.
That's awesome.
We're trying to get presenters in those countries to be able to kind of continue on so that it's not so expensive to bring us out.
That's very cool. So we have live presentations, and another resource that I wanted to mention was the three-part documentary, Brain Heart World, that released recently.
And when I wasn't part of that at all. But you were the beginning, since day one.
Yeah.
You helped create the documentary. How long did that take you guys to produce?
Do
you remember?
Yeah.
Has it been like a couple months?
We started it like 3 months ago. When I think about how long it took us to produce that, it hurts my brain a little bit. If we were to do it again, obviously we could do it a lot faster, but we went down a lot of kind of wrong paths and took a long time to raise the appropriate funds for it. And I remember getting the first cut of the first episode. We'd worked on the scripting, we'd worked on things, and I kind of like finally got the first cut. We're watching the first cut, and I was just like, no. So we literally threw that away. And we had to kind of start from scratch a little bit and say, okay, no, structurally and thematically and from a tone perspective, like, we've got to make a lot of changes. So long answer to your simple question, it took years to produce that documentary series.
I've watched it a few times now.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And every time I'm still laughing out loud. It's a great, it makes me chuckle.
Yeah, I mean,
the humor is great.
I'm glad that you bring that up, because one of the objectives was like, look, this is a difficult topic, and every documentary that I've ever seen on this subject has been dark, dreary, kind of doomsday, dark room with the face illuminated by the computer screen, kind of like, and we just didn't want to go down that path. We wanted to produce this for the youth themselves. So right away I said, okay, I don't want to mention the word pornography for the first 4 minutes. And I want them laughing in the first 30 seconds. And I wanted humor to be a big part of the entire experience. And I wanted to be hopeful and uplifting and empowering and not shaming and not dark and kind of heavy. And there are definitely, we have to touch on some topics that are not rainbows in the park, but we want to do it. And ultimately, the message that we conclude on in every episode is very much we can do this, and that there's hope, and that we're powerful as we link arms together, and we can do a lot of good together. So,
and I bet the podcast will be similar. Sometimes it's going to be heavy, the stuff we talk about can be heavy, but we also need some laughter in there. We need some hope. One of the things I hear you talk about from time to time, it's come up a couple times over the course of knowing you, is making a dent.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of our fighters and a lot of people listening to this podcast, they want to make a dent.
Oh, yeah.
In their way.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of people feel like, if this was a live experience, we could have people raise their hands. How many listening to this podcast right now have ever felt like that you wanted to do something that mattered, that helped people, that created change, that had an impact, positive impact in the world? Most likely every hand would go up, because that is something that is a part of us. And I think that when I look at what Fight the New Drug is and what it embodies, what I find probably most inspiring about this entire experience over the last decade is watching individuals come up, creatively develop ideas and plans to raise awareness and change the conversation in their own way, using their own resources, using their own platforms, and just kind of owning the movement. And we could share so many stories of individuals that just...
There was I think she was like 16 or 17 years old, this girl that we did some presentations for their school right there in that same area. There was 5 schools within the area. And this girl put together the 5 presentations. She helped.
She did her own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
she helped raise the funds and she helped coordinate it.
Yeah.
And
beautiful.
She's a great example.
Oh my gosh. We could spend 5 episodes of this podcast, more telling incredible stories one after another of our fighters, you know, taking ownership of this campaign and doing something, utilizing their own skills, their own talents, their own influence, and kind of like just being creative. You, Garrett, are a great example of this. I don't know how many of our listeners right now listening know how you...
Probably not many.
Came to be a part of our team. And I'll just tell it from my viewpoint, because we'll probably do another episode where you dive more into your story. But all of a sudden, I get this phone call from a buddy who told me that he's like, "Have you heard of this guy?" And I'm like, what guy? He's like, "This guy that's running 30 marathons in 30 days. And I'm like, "Wait, who does that? Wait, who's this guy?" He's like, "Yeah, and he's running wearing a Porn Kids Love t-shirt. He's running symbolically wearing handcuffs to represent addiction. And like the whole thing is to raise awareness on this topic. And have you heard of it?" I'm like, "No, what is this? Is it happening? When is it going to happen?" He's like, "No, dude, it's already happening. In fact, on this 30-day marathon, it's like day 26 when I get this call." So you'd been running, I don't know, did you even tell us that you were going to do this or reach out to us?
Yeah, I reached out. The volume of inquiries we get is challenging to manage.
So I didn't.
It just fell through the cracks somehow.
I did not hear about it until day 26. We finally joined up with you because you were local. You were in our same area. And so we joined up with you on the last day, on day 30, for like the last block, because that's all we know how to run. That's like, I couldn't do a marathon. So you were on our radar. We're like, "Who is this guy?" And you were just like, again, an individual, no political influence, no like, you know, significant financial resources, no platform, major platform to speak of. You're just an individual that said, "I want to use my voice and I want to do something big." It's kind of like that quote by Edward Everett Hale. "I am only one, but I am one. I cannot do everything, but I can do something. And I will not let what I cannot do interfere with what I can do." And you embody that. And so it's kind of like you got on our radar, I swear it was like a couple weeks later. This is after you ran 30 marathons in 30 days. So I'd be in a hospital in a coma. I'd be like IVs, like, you know, give me oxygen, all the above. You come back and you said, "Hey, I got another idea. I'm going to ride my bike by myself from Virginia to San Francisco." And I'm going to drag chains behind me, symbolic to like the heaviness of addiction. It's like, dude, who are you? Anyway, I love that. Telling that story, because there's a video, actually. We produced a video. Go check it out on our website, Garrett's story. But that's how we met you. And so there's so many other Garretts, is my point. So many other Garretts out there that have kind of like said, "Okay, what can I do? How can I help?" And it can be as simple as just having conversations, opening your mouth, or being a support for somebody that's struggling and loving them and encouraging them on that recovery path. It can be something more involved, where you're organizing, you know, 30 marathons in 30 days, or an event in your area, or a presentation that you want to put on in your class or whatever.
You want to do something. My suggestion is always do something you feel comfortable with.
Do something that matches
that
you.
That matches you. That fits your strengths,
yeah,
and your talent,
and that takes so many different forms. That's what's beautiful. Like when we started Fight the Drug, we knew that we wanted to be kind of a creative warehouse where we produced content, but the distribution of that content and the distribution of the movement, really the ownership, really lied in the hands of the followers, the fighters, and that was the vision, and that has still remained true. That it's because of those creative and ambitious individuals that feel deeply about this topic and want to, you know, evoke change. They're the ones making the difference. They're the ones kind of making this, you know, making the impact. And I'm just floored by the wonderful people out there.
Another resource that we offer, and I'd like to hear your opinion on, I haven't heard you talk to this at all, is Fight the New Drug, the blueprint. of how to start conversations.
Yeah, I love this resource. It's something that often comes up, and we would answer this question either verbally in front of someone, or we, you know, write a long email describing things. But a lot of people ask the question like, okay, I'm willing to open my mouth. I'm willing to have the conversation, but I don't know how to have that conversation. Right. I don't know even where to begin. And so we actually created a resource, which I'm very proud of, which allows you to kind of select who you are and who you want to talk to. So I'm a parent wanting to talk to my child, or I'm a child wanting to talk to my parent, or I'm a girlfriend wanting to talk to my boyfriend, or I'm a, you know, whatever that dynamic is, because the conversation is different according to the context of who it is and who you're speaking to and the age, right? So we wanted to create this kind of a choose your own adventure conversation, kind of a blueprint. And so as you select who you are and who you're wanting to talk to, it then walks you through kind of do's and don'ts, you know, like, okay, make sure to avoid shaming in this conversation, make sure you follow these principles and make sure you don't do these things and make sure you focus around these things. So it doesn't necessarily give you an actual script, although there are examples of literal scripting kind of ways to kind of engage and start the conversation and prime it. But focusing more about kind of what you need to know to engage in that. And we worked with experts around this. We worked with experts and professionals to be able to craft this choose your own adventure resource. And so, you know, here at Fight the Inner Drug, we're all about, you know, sparking and changing and having a conversation and opening your mouth. And, you know, how could we fully do that without giving you kind of a blueprint on how to achieve that? And so I feel like it's long overdue, but we have it now.
Yeah, it's a useful tool. I've navigated it a little bit. One thing I wanted to suggest that we should consider is, you know, when like you're going through this conversation, then it gets awkward.
Yeah.
So we need like bailout moments, like random excuses to end the conversation very quickly.
That's good. I like that.
No, I'm just joking. But
we'll consider that.
So there's just so much to talk about, Clay. Brain Heart World, the blueprint. What am I missing, Clay? What else?
I mean, as far as resources go, I mean, we're literally engaging in one of them. We have the you know, Consider Before Consuming document podcast. We've got so many other ways to like share. And
what about Truth About Porn?
Yeah, Truth About Porn is another project that we've worked on over the years, working with professionals. So Truth About Porn is simply a website catered and directed specifically at the research. So it's not a movement, it's not a campaign, it's simply saying, okay, the latest research curated for you, and it's searchable. You can go there and say, I want to know how pornography is impacting
individuals.
Youth or individuals. I want to know how pornography is influencing violence or the connection between trafficking and pornography. And you can just search, and it pulls up research where you can dig in, research, find it. So if you're doing a paper, if you're writing an article, or if you just want to be better informed about the topic from an academic perspective, truthaboutporn.org is a great place to go. And there's also interviews from experts all over the world.
And if our goal at Fight the New Drug is to change the conversation, the important thing is having conversations.
Yes.
Right? Did your parents talk to you about pornography, or did they have the birds and the bees talk with you? Or
so my parents were on the side of, yes, we are going to have this conversation. Yes, we are going to engage. Yes, we're going to, you know, broach this topic with you. They did it. They had all the right intentions, and they. I mean, some. I just remember, my parents bought like a 8 VHS tape series of kind of how, you know, procreation work and works and how your body works and whatnot. And we literally like sat down, all of us together.
Made some popcorn
and put one tape in at a time and watched it. And it was like reenactments. It was like, it was beyond awkward. Just beyond.
One of our goals at Fight the New Drug is to make these conversations not awkward.
Yes.
Which is challenging for some.
Yeah, I think that the reason my experience was awkward wasn't necessarily because of the way they went about that moment. I mean, you know, we could go into detail about what ways they could have, what they could have done differently. But I think I applaud them for taking that initiative and doing what they did do. I think it could have been a whole lot less awkward had we had other conversations preceding those. Meaning, when we talk to parents, we talk to parents about the fact that you need to have conversations with your kids sooner than you think and on into their adulthood. This is not a one-time conversation. This is an ongoing dialogue that starts young and it continues. And this idea of like, okay, they have reached X age, you know, and now we're going to sit them down with popcorn and put in the VHS tapes, or now we're going to stream this video online. Those days need to be gone. That's not a healthy way to navigate our current landscape today. Today, the conversation needs to start young. And it's not all about the negatives. It's about the positives. You teach them about the healthy, healthy versions of relationships and eventually sexuality before we talk about their counterfeits, so that there's some context. If you come at them with the finger wag and kind of talk to them about all the harms and the negatives and whatnot, or you're introducing them to sexuality through the harmful side of that, that can be disorienting.
Scare tactics.
It can be disorienting. You have no way to kind of like compute. You know, you then kind of it's classify all sexuality as unhealthy, and that's not true, and is negative. But there's a beautiful side to our sexuality, and it's wonderful, and we need to help young people understand that.
And not only sexuality, but human connection, because you've talked about the hollow counterfeits of love and human connection. One of those is pornography, but it's like, some of that science and research is showing that it's going to disrupt all relationships.
Oh, yeah.
And you as an individual.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to touch on real quick, as a person who had a challenge with pornography, if my parents didn't talk to me, not that I remember.
Yeah.
I don't think they talked to me about the harm.
So you were on the other side of
that. Yeah, exactly. I was on the other side. And I think that if my parents came to me and said, hey, do you have a challenge with pornography? Do you want to talk about it? I would have lied to them 100 times.
Yes.
Probably.
Yes.
And I was a good kid.
Yes.
But I did not want to talk to my parents about this.
Yeah, of course. Because it wasn't talked about. I think that would have been a different experience had that been an open conversation that, you know, that preceded that struggle. If there was an openness and a safety to discussing and having questions and learning about these things from an early age, age appropriate, of course. When that time came where you struggled with pornography, you know, your parents would have said like, hey, when was the last time you saw it? It was like, oh, well, to be honest, it was about here. And they know, you would know in that moment, you would know that this is a safe conversation because we've had this conversation. And this is a safe thing to admit or talk about because they love you and they want, and they've communicated that to you verbally and nonverbally for years prior to that moment. So I think it can be awkward, but I don't think it needs to be. It doesn't need to be awkward. And there are ways to avoid awkward. I've talked to many parents who have conversations with their kids and talk about their struggles with pornography and other struggles that they are having, mental, emotional struggles that they're having. And it's an open and free and safe conversation. And it's not awkward. They talk about their kids about pornography. It's not awkward. Why? Because it's not a one-time event. It's not a, here we go.
But you also have to start the conversation somewhere. For some people, it's going to be, I mean, you kind of have to navigate through some of those awkward situations.
Yeah, but you don't start with porn. You start, way before with kind of like, you know, healthy touch and unhealthy touch. And you talk about, you know, reasons for private areas. And you talk... And you talk about the beauty of relationships and you kind of navigate that over time, and then you start to introduce these details. And there's a lot of resources out there, books that are available in having those early conversations with kids. We don't produce those, but there's great things from Educate and Empower Kids, great things from Protect Young Minds and others. So it's navigatable, and it doesn't need to be awkward, is all I'm saying. It can be. Yeah. It doesn't need to be.
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about what you've helped create, Clay. And one of those things is the Fortify program.
And can you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah. Fortify came about out of a need. I mean, we were doing these live presentations. We were, you know, doing a lot on social media, and we were literally getting at first hundreds, then thousands, then literally over, at that time, over 10,000 messages from individuals, a lot of young people asking for help. They're saying, hey, we're on board with the mission. We love the cause, but we need help. Can you help
us? And that wasn't in our wheelhouse.
No, we're not therapists. Our goal is to raise awareness, not to like help people recover. And so we were like, oh, great, no problem. You need help? Okay, here's a list of organizations that you can turn to that we know and that we recommend. And they weren't going to get that support and help. And after a while, we kind of picked up on this, and we're like, why is nobody getting this support and help? And it boiled down to three main reasons. One is that a lot of these individuals were youth, and a lot of the organizations that we were pointing to weren't geared to that kind of an audience. But the other two were the bigger hurdles. The next one was the fact that a lot of these organizations required parental consent, and they also required a credit card, neither of which they had or were willing to get. So it was basically like telling these young people to climb.
Help is available, but you're not.
Yeah, it's like climb Mount Everest, summit that mountain, and they're just like, oh, I'm not going to do that. Yeah, I'm okay. I don't have that big of a problem.
Kids don't want to ask for a credit card. Because no. They have to answer why.
Yeah, it's just like
a lot of hurdles.
A lot of hurdles, and so they weren't going. So pretty much, we were telling them as a society, we were saying, "Okay, stay in your dark corner until it gets much worse, and you become of age, and you have a credit card. Then come to us, and we'll kind of point you in the right direction. Once it's much worse, like that's not a plan. That's a terrible plan. So, but this was a largely unknown market because of the secrecy surrounding this topic. Nobody was like aware of this market. And we were only made aware of it because of the messages that were coming. They were confiding in us, but nobody else. It was like, I have not told a soul, but I'm telling you, I need help. Can you help me? And we're like, oh my goodness, what do we do? How do we help these people? So that led us down a path, a journey to say, what are our options? And so we knew that we weren't the therapist. We weren't like trying to replace therapy. That was never kind of an ambition. Still to this day, that's not what we ended up creating. What we created was an app, free for youth and free for adults as well, that basically helped them connect with others on the same journey, learn about their challenge and ways to address it and strategize to overcome it, and then also track and visualize that progress over time. So we created an app for them. We called it Fortify. And today, right now, we've helped over 200,000 individuals in 155 countries overcome pornography or on that journey of overcoming pornography, which has been, you know, really inspiring to kind of be a part of that journey. Not one that I expected to engage in, but I've learned so much, and I've seen so many just overwhelmingly positive stories of people kind of triumphing over this challenge and saving relationships. And
that one of the words you mentioned in that explanation was connection. You said we help people connect with.
Yeah.
And that connection is so critical.
Oh, it's critical. I mean, connecting, whether it be, and that can take a lot of forms. That can be a deeper connection with family, friends, or loved ones. It can be connecting with accountability partners or allies. It can be connecting with a higher power. It can be connecting with oneself and kind of the relationship you have with taking care of yourself, whether that's sleep, nutrition, exercise, or just even the way that you look at yourself. Yeah. What we found, and this is maybe another podcast down the road, but to kind of uncover what we have found through the over 200,000 individuals doing this, and what we have found to be kind of some commonalities between those that do find that long-lasting healing, that so much of our struggle, and this would go beyond just pornography, this is any compulsion that you might find, even mental health challenges, so much has to do with our the way that we're living our lives and our lifestyle, you know, the environments that we find ourselves in, the trauma that maybe is following us that we haven't dealt with appropriately, the connections that we have with our loved ones, again, our connection with even ourselves. So it's been a beautiful journey. I've learned a lot, and I would encourage any listener that's out there that's struggling with this or knows somebody that is struggling, go to Fortify. It doesn't replace anything that they might already be involved in or that might need to be involved in down the road. It is a companion or a complement to anything. And for many people, it's all they need to kind of like get over that hump. And for others, it's a great companion to like follow them on the entire recovery journey into therapy and aftercare and everything else. So if they're struggling, go to joinfortify.com. It's free for youth. There's free version for adults. We're just trying to help as many people as we can. And yeah.
And just to be clear, Fight the New Drug and Fortify are separate.
They are separate entities. In order for both of them to kind of thrive, we had to separate them to allow kind of, because you know, Fortify is essentially a tech company. You know, it has, you know, developers and design. So it had a lot of demand, and it was kind of putting a burden on the nonprofit. So we, as we separated those two entities, it allowed both of them to kind of thrive and really focus on their particular missions.
And then another clarification is, it's not, you mentioned it's not to replace therapy.
So individuals that are working inside of a therapeutic experience that can use Fortify as a companion to that experience, so it can help them connect with others, it can help them track and visualize their progress. And that tracking and data can actually be sent to their therapist, so their therapist can now track and visualize their progress from their side of the fence, and it can kind of unify that experience.
Oh, that's cool.
And then obviously there's the training and learning that occurs in the curriculum. So it's a powerful, powerful experience for self-guided individuals and for those that are working with a professional.
Some of our episodes are going to be heavier than others, depending on the topic.
Yeah.
And we always need to cover those things that are heavy and that are not the most enjoyable things to talk about. But we also want our episodes to have the hope.
Yes.
And so I think the big question, Clay, is like, is the healing process a real thing?
Well, first of all, I mean, absolutely. We've seen it. We've experienced it. We've healing and recovery, they're real. I know that some listeners might be out there saying, I've tried everything, or this is my fifth attempt, or I've seen 10 therapists or whatever it may be.
Even more. I mean, there's going to be people out there. Fifth attempt is just like, that happened last week.
Yeah.
You know, like,
well, I'm just saying that there's individuals out there that feel completely hopeless when it comes to overcoming this, and they feel like they're at their wit's end. And I'm telling you, I mean, and with all, if I could reach through this microphone and into through the headphones and you know, shake whoever's listening and saying, look, it's real. Recovery is real, and it is possible. It's not easy, and it is a journey. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a process. But it's real, and the joy and happiness that accompanies true healing is so deep and profound that if you could just get a glimpse of what that is like, you'd be willing to do anything to get there. And I'm telling you, don't give up. You're not alone. Don't give up. There is hope, and I think that there's a lot of different ways to achieve long-lasting healing and recovery, and just keep going, keep moving forward. And if there's anything that we can do to help you, please reach out.
Awesome. So, Clay, we've gone from where you started, where we started, where we're at. Now the next step is talking about the future. What's your vision as co-founder and president of Fight the New Drug?
You know, there's a lot that we have not been able to accomplish, and there's a lot that we still have a large appetite to pursue and achieve. You know, a simple answer to your question is to keep doing what we're doing, but at scale. And a more detailed question is you know, how and why, and you know, looking at expanding internationally in a more profound and deep and robust way,
in multiple languages and spreading this message well beyond just here in the United States and with a couple of straggling kind of efforts here and there, but really start to grow this internationally. I think here in the United States, you know, there's we although we have achieved you know, a pretty sizable following and we've presented in a lot of schools, we have literally scratched the surface when it comes to the amount of schools and youth that need to hear this message that just have not. There are still a handful of states that we've just never been into. There are still so many ways that we can kind of package this content and message and infiltrate different areas and institutions and organizations to be able to provide this information to different groups. When I look at where we've come over the last 10 years, I'm proud. But my goodness, when you think about what needs to happen, and in a realistic way, I'm not talking about like, you know, pie in the sky kind of talk. In a realistic fashion, what we can reasonably obtain and achieve, it's kind of overwhelming and yet at the same time exciting that that there is an opportunity to continue to scale and expand this message in a variety of different formats and a variety of different channels and to a variety of different audiences. Wouldn't it be great if we weren't needed?
Exactly.
Wouldn't it be great? I would love to shut our doors someday and say that people are now fully aware of the potential risks. Does it mean that pornography is, you know, eradicated from the planet? No, of course. That's literally never going to happen. And anyone who thinks otherwise is not thinking straight. It's going to be around. And it's not about, you know, getting rid of it. It's about helping the consumers of pornography recognize the potential risks. There are a lot of people that smoke today that are well aware of the potential risk of lung cancer. And yeah, they do it knowingly. They light up knowingly. And that's their right to do so. And I would say that for pornography, you know, I would love to see a day in which the awareness factor is no longer, that the concern of awareness is no longer on the table. And you know, we're all well aware. People still consume it, but they do it fully acknowledging the potential risks. And those...
I always hear you talk about lowering the demand.
Yeah.
Basically, what you're...
Basically, what I'm describing is, like, we're not here to limit the supply, but rather decrease the demand through education. And those that do not want to participate, those that hear the message and think twice and consider before consuming and actually decide to go another direction away from pornography and its influence, that is I would guess that there would be a lot of those people. In fact, it's not a guess. We know that there'd be a lot of those people that choose another path, and by doing so would decrease demand. So, you know, there's a lot of hope and a lot of work. A lot of work and a whole lot of hope for where we're heading and what's occurring right now.
The goal is health, right?
The goal is health, happiness.
We're trying to create happiness, hope. Like, yeah, these things are needed in a society, in a healthy society.
Yes.
And pornography, whether someone is aware of it or not, the science and research is showing that pornography is disrupting that health.
Yes.
It's disrupting individual level.
Relational health level. And what's interesting about that, if you talk just about the health portion of that, so if it's impacting the health of your relationships, literally, you know, the Harvard study looked at, for over 73 years, over 700 teens, and they measured, they were looking at, trying to answer one question: what is the secret to happiness? And they found that happiness is directly connected with, like, definitively connected to relationships and love. And therefore,
and
like, anything and anything that disrupts that, the health of those relationships, is disrupting your happiness, literally.
Which usually, and in a lot of cases, is going to push the person towards isolation more.
Correct. Right. It's a cycle. You recognize that and you say, oh my goodness, like, is the dots all connect? And you're like, okay, all right, now let's go educate around this.
It's awesome. Clay, thanks for being here today.
Yeah.
It was a pleasure to sit down with you. We learned a lot. And thanks for all you do. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, we are grateful. Thanks, Clay.
See ya.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Consider Before Consuming. Consider Before Consuming is brought to you by Fight the New Drug. Fight the New Drug is a non-religious, non-legislative nonprofit that exists to provide individuals opportunity to make an informed decision regarding pornography by raising awareness on its harmful effects using only science, facts, and personal accounts. Episodes drop every other week for a 5-month period. This episode is dedicated to the founders of Fight the New Drug, to the early donors who caught the vision, and to all the fighters around the globe. You are the movement.